Well, Labor Party MPs are gathering in Wellington today for the first time and since Saturday's landslide election, which saw Labor win the party vote in all but four electorates around the country. 22 new Labor MPs are starting their orientation at Parliament about now, and the full caucus will meet Labor later today. With 64 seats, Labor has more than enough to govern alone and does not need the Green Party's 10 seats. The Green Party was part of the coalition government for the last 3 years, with three ministerial portfolios sitting outside Cabinet. But what, if anything, is it likely to get this time around? The Green Party co-leader Marama Davidson is my guest about 10:30 this morning. But first, to discuss what lies ahead for government formation and for a gutted National Party, we welcome political commentators Neil Jones and Trish Sherson. Good morning, Neil, in the Wellington studio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Trish, in the Auckland studio.
Good morning.
Neil was Chief of Staff to Labor leader Jacinda Ardern, prior to that Chief of Staff to Andrew Little. He's the Director of Capital Government Relations. Trish Sherson is from corporate affairs firm Sherson Willis and a former ACT Party Press Secretary. First thoughts, Trish, and shall we start with government formation? Are we getting some hints from the Prime Minister that maybe very much a Labor-dominated government, if almost not entirely a Labor government?
Well, yes, I think we are, and that's exactly where the numbers have fallen. And with this extraordinary result, with 64 seats, Labor really doesn't need anyone else. However, I wonder whether that will be one of the new and sort of never been before features of this. If you think about how well Labor has worked with the Greens, how well Jacinda Ardern and James Shaw worked together particularly, and also probably the need for James Shaw's skill and experience, even if it remains outside Cabinet, with his experience particularly around climate change, I wouldn't be surprised if this was a first time that, even without leverage, a party on the right side of the government did get more than would be expected with the way the numbers fell. And I think it will be interesting if you're the Greens to really manage very carefully, given that you don't technically have leverage with numbers, but just what the policies are that you advance there. And probably the easiest one for them to pick off would be their oceans policy, which is something that it's new and interesting. It's something that the government hasn't tackled, but it also wouldn't probably stray into the area or areas like social welfare reform that would frighten the National voters who have gone through to Labor this election. Neil.
Yeah, I think Jacinda Ardern would be wise to bring the Greens in. I think a confidence and supply agreement is far better for the Greens than a coalition in this instance. Had Labor needed the Greens, I would have thought a coalition would be better for the Greens because they could sit inside the Cabinet. Given Labor doesn't need them, the Greens don't want to be tied, I wouldn't think, to decisions made by the Labor Party that the Greens cannot veto. So a confidence and supply agreement would let them have some ministers, it would let them get some policy wins, and they could also distance themselves from the Labor Party as needed. It makes sense to me that the Greens come in. Jacinda Ardern, she doesn't really need the buffer, because with 64, maybe 65 seats after specials, that's a pretty good majority. But I think there are good ministers in the Greens. James Shaw, I don't know why you wouldn't make him climate change minister. I don't know why you wouldn't give Julian Genter a portfolio. They do have some good ideas that Labor can pick up and run with. And I think also Labor doesn't want an opposition on the left. You know, the last thing you want is rocks being thrown at you from the left and the right. Far better to bring the Greens in and have a voice at the table.
It's an interesting one, Trish. You mentioned Julian Genter. She had that reported spat and the letter being sent to Phil Twyford over Wellington Transport.
But this is just Beltway stuff. I mean, at the end of the day,
You call it Beltway stuff. Try explaining that to anyone in Wellington at the moment who's seen absolutely no progress on that transport
package.
Well, they should move
on with that transport package. But what I mean to say, though, is issues about letters and so forth, I don't think that should cloud what has actually been a pretty good effort, I think, from Julian Genter as a minister.
The point is what kind of relationship it is. Mm. And to that point, Trish, this phrase that got raised by the Prime Minister, we think she may have been referring to the cooperation agreement of 2005.
Yes.
I can't quite remember the word she used, actually. It was a different kind of word. A collaboration agreement or something. The question is how this sits. You talk about them being in. Are they really in if they are ministers outside of Cabinet? You go back to 2005, where Jeanette Fitzsimons was a spokesperson outside, a government spokesperson outside of government, actually, I think we got to in the end.
Yes.
How much does that nuance matter when it comes to actual power?
Well, I think it does matter. And let's just have a look. That was a very different and quite a clever agreement by Clark back then, which was a cooperation agreement, right? So,
Forced by Peters. Can I just give some context? Yeah. Forced by Peters, according to Labor, not countenancing Greens being part of that government. So they don't have that excuse, Labor, this time.
No, that's exactly right. And also think about this. Strategically, Greens played a smart game during the election in not having a crack at Labor. They ran a pretty positive campaign based on their own ideas, so there's no ill feeling, hanging over after that. Also, in the past government, the Greens were in a confidence and supply arrangement, so their ministers were outside of Cabinet. But if you think about it, I think they were on every cabinet committee bar one. So, in effect, they had the same seat at the table. And I think, if there's one quality that we've really seen from Jacinda Ardern, it's the ability to put to the side what you would traditionally think would be the thing to do in sort of partisan politics and do things outside of that square. So for that reason, I think that there will be Green ministers. But as I say, that the behaviour not of the Green ministers who are doing the negotiating, so I think that will be James Shaw and Marama Davidson. They've indicated this morning it would be early this week they would start having those talks. I think it's more for the Green Party members to think very carefully about the positioning here, and that any sort of silly talk which steps beyond where the numbers have actually fallen would be, really disadvantageous in the next few weeks.
Do we think that's some of what Ms. Ardern's messaging is about at the moment? This is
Ms. Ardern.
This is a starter. Well, she's Prime Minister-elect. We can use that as well.
All right.
Sorry for the...
No, I thought you were doing a Judith Collins, Catherine.
No. No.
Calm down, Neil.
He's a little bit excited after Saturday.
Yes.
Do we think this is what she's doing? She's positioning, as you do at the start of any negotiations / discussions, by letting you see how little you have to bargain with.
Yeah, I mean, she's got to keep her cards close to her chest. If she started off by promising the world to the Greens, it's hardly going to be a good place to start negotiations. I think, as Trish notes, the Greens do have to recognise that they have very little leverage. And so they shouldn't go in there expecting the same kind of arrangement and dividends from an agreement that they might have got had Labor relied on them.
What are the challenges going to be in key portfolios? By the way, I might ask you to go through them this morning, but is this another matter? She's now got an enormous caucus, some of whom have been there for a while, and they'll be looking for various roles. Counter to that, some people say she's got, four or five ministers who do everything. So what do you weigh up with an incoming large caucus like this and your allocation of portfolios and who gets what? She's got some really important portfolios she's got to get in the right hands, first and foremost, Trish.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's start probably the big one is the Deputy Prime Minister, right? And Calvin Davis, with his poorly executed speech on Saturday night, I think has probably done himself out of the running for that job. And if you think about Grant Robertson, and in particular the comments from the Prime Minister today about how she is really going to focus on the relationship with business. Michael Cullen and Helen Clark, I think, have both given her advice in the last 24 hours about how important that will be, given that business will do the heavy lifting in any economic recovery. And Grant Robertson has developed a good relationship with business and is respected. So I think him as Deputy Prime Minister would send a further signal there about just how important that relationship would be. And he's a very safe pair of hands. I think when you come down, the other issue is those sort of four or five ministers who have really carried the weight of the world on their shoulders. Chris Hipkins is one who's still shouldering both education and health, and that will have to change. Megan Woods probably will have to have some sort of redistribution because she's very capable. She's done the management of the campaign, but probably needs a breather to be able to focus on one or two of those large portfolios. I think there are some other... if you look at Kiritapu Allen, who actually took the East Coast seat off National, she would probably be looking to be, a junior minister either inside or outside of Cabinet. But then I think that the bigger issue for Labor, if you come down, if you've got a cohort, I could be wrong here, Neil, correct me, but it's around 22 brand new MPs coming into Parliament. That is a hell of a job to get all of those MPs in and inducted and headed in the right direction and have no missteps. So I think there's a lot of work both
at
the
good whips.
You've a lot of whipping. You've got an issue at the top end, and you've got a sort of management issue at the bottom end.
Happy problem to have, I'm sure. Neil, your take.
Yeah, so I think one of the interesting ones will be infrastructure and regional development, which were under Shane Jones. I think it would make sense for Graham Robertson to pick something like that up. I think it's been very clear over the last 12 months that Graham Robertson really is leading that work in this area, and that it is the core driver of the government's economic policy. So I wouldn't be surprised if Graham Robertson picked up something like that. Foreign affairs has to be filled. I understand Andrew Little is probably the front runner there, maybe David Parker, who has trade. And as Trish mentions, health and education, Hipkins will probably want to get rid of at least one of those. My feeling is education's his passion, but he's done a good job in health, so it'll be hard to...
So who would you put there? Would you move a Megan Woods into it?
Absolutely no idea. Megan Woods would be very, very good at health, I think.
You've got, obviously, a couple of useful associates who would be brand new, but you wouldn't advance beyond associates. She's a details person, isn't
has
she?
To be very has to be a very senior, details-focused and very driven minister, because that is a department. You know, the Ministry of Health does have some serious issues, and it needs a minister who can be across the detail and really drive them and make them do things. I think there are some Labour MPs who would be ready for ministerial portfolios, so Kieran McAnulty, Kitty Allen, Michael Wood, Deborah Russell, and Jan Tinetti, maybe in an education space. I think they've all shown themselves to be up to it. And as Trish noted, the backbench, the last thing you want is a bunch of backbench MPs coming in without much experience and just tripping over themselves. So there'll need to be a bit of investment there. I would suggest perhaps getting someone in the Prime Minister's office or even in the Whip's office who is senior, who is a contact point for them, to sort of say, if you're ever going to say something and you're not quite sure, just give Bob a ring and he'll sort it out.
You know that breathe through the nose thing?
It's like puppies let out of a bag, isn't it? I mean, it's just, it's extraordinary with people tumbling all over each other. I think the other two portfolios that are worth thinking about, though, and again, these are ones that are left vacant now because of New Zealand First. Obviously, Ron Mark had defence, and you had the very capable Tracy Martin, who Jacinda Ardern really rated in the important portfolio looking after Oranga Tamariki. So those will have to be filled as well.
Now, let's talk about National, and let's first look at that election result. The big shift from the polls, and I can't recall the polls having been so consistent within and between each other ahead of an election for years. Where the differential was, it looked like National bled another 3% to Labour, essentially, when push came to shove on Saturday, compared to where we'd been sitting. They've got their review coming, Trish. What does it have to get to the bottom of? Where did this... Gosh, in February they were tied up. In February they were potentially a government in waiting. Yes, COVID happened and was always going to have a massive impact, but what from their own behaviour do they have to get to the bottom of?
Well, they squandered what was one of the strongest oppositional party votes that had ever held up, right? So for 3 years, their party vote sat between kind of the low 40s and mid to high 40s, which was extraordinary. You can't underestimate, we talked about this last week, but the horrendous Muller debacle. I mean, that not only did it go to the heart of obviously machinations in the background of the party that people are saying now were going on for 2 years, but the fact that in the right in the cut and thrust of the critical time pre-election campaign, you had a shambles like that, which really pulled the rug out from under everyone, and it was very hard to get back on track from then, given that you didn't didn't have the policy work done, and then you had a new leader in Judith Collins trying to sort of front foot things when the back end was still pretty untidy. I think there's two critical questions, and they're pretty simple. Number one, and this is something that is probably a first for National, to really ask the question, why did we lose? So you can't blame anyone else. You can't blame Winston Peters. And particularly, why did we lose those long-held blue rural seats?
They've only got, was it four electorate seats where they won the party vote?
It's extraordinary.
I think Judith Collins' Papakura's seat, Labour won the party vote. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's an absolute bloodbath.
So losing the seats, I hear what you're saying about losing your local representative, but the party vote and what should be your strongholds as well.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I think that again comes back to the fact that it was an absolute punishment for National because they had looked like such a shambles and so disorganised. But I think the second question they have to ask themselves is, what is our purpose as a party? Because that appeared to me to be one of the biggest issues. They have lost their way. How do they kind of bridge this gap between the Liberals in the party and what appeared more strongly over the campaign, I thought worryingly, this sort of very conservative Christian part of the party. And I think, you know, the warning for National is if you really want to regain the centre, you're going to have to find a way to manage that properly because it doesn't sit well.
It's an interesting question to me as to what a conservative party looks like in 2020. And your conservatism is based on your values, but your policies and the things that you pay attention to potentially have to shift a bit. And in fairness, you know, on stuff like climate change, it had, Neil. Ironically, Todd Muller had done all that work and National had signed up to the Zero Carbon Act.
Yeah, although, even during the election campaign, Judith Collins seemed to be talking out both sides of her mouth about climate change. I think every point Trish made, I agree with. They do have a real question about sort of the battle of the soul of the National Party. Are they going to be the moderate, centrist, forward-looking party of John Key? Are they going to become a sort of conservative Christian party? Are they going to go further down the Trumpy angle? Like, what are they actually going to be? And I think the other thing they have to look at is what, you know, their representation. I mean, it is an extremely white male party now. There are more people called Chris in the National Caucus than there are Māori. I mean, it is just 1950s stuff. It's not even credible in the 21st century to look like that. And I think more broadly, they need to have a serious look at themselves. In 2014, after that catastrophic defeat for Labour, I was involved in the party at that time at a senior level, and you know, we had to look ourselves in the eye and say, people hate us. You know, we were utterly rejected. Why do they hate us and how do we change? And it took a huge process of internal, you know, organisational, cultural change. And they've got to do that. It's what they did in 2002.
Trish, can you speak to that, about the organisational structure? Because speaking of selections, the reason that party now has lost its diversity is because guess where they all were,
they put all the
party
list. Minorities at the bottom.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
And so there's that side of it. But are there other matters organisationally? Even having MPs who had to be sacked the last couple of terms or moved on for some of the stupid behaviour that we saw. You know, don't you know who I am to a hotel worker? How are you making your decisions about how you're putting in there?
And that goes to culture, right? That comes right from the top. So I think the National Party board from the president down, they need to be part of the review. And let's be clear, some of the selection, absolute cock-ups, i.e. Auckland Central, were caused by meddling from the board. So I think that is a starting point. And I heard recently an interview actually about what makes fantastic sports teams, and there's been a value in the last few years brought in, which is not a dickhead. That is one of the key values, and I think that would be fantastic for National to adopt, because actually, if you look at that kind of misbehaviour and the don't you know who I am...
Yeah, well, Rangatata, for goodness sake, they lost that seat. Last Labour MP to hold that seat was Jim Sutton when it was Araki. You know, it's farming heartland.
But look at what happened there.
This is my point.
They lost Islam.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I think that the other interesting thing is, you know, National is going to start this new parliament navel-gazing. The opportunity then is for David Seymour to step more in the role of the main sort of opposition sort of leader. But again, the issue for Seymour is this, and ACT had the biggest result they had ever had since they first came in 97 when they had 9 MPs. When they came in 97 with 9 new MPs, and a new party, they actually had 3 ex-senior cabinet ministers, Preble, Shirley and Derek Quigley, who could run those newbies. David Seymour is very experienced as an opposition MP on his own. He has no experience of leading a team like that. And more importantly, what ACT have to realise is they got the grumpy vote. And the grumpy vote is always grumpy, and the grumpy vote moves around. So I think ACT has also got It's a great result for them, but they have got a mountain to climb.
Let's talk about leadership within National then. I know we've got to let you go in a minute, Trish, but just quickly to you, Neil, and then I'll give you a little bit more time. What do they do about leadership? Colin says she wants to stay on. They have to leave her while they somehow sort out where they even head from here, don't they?
Yeah, I think we all know that if we're sitting here in 2023, we're not talking about National Party leader Judith Collins. And I don't think in this day and age you can survive a catastrophic defeat like that. Collins did inherit a party in a mess, and she did have a hard job, but she ran a catastrophically amateur campaign. And I think she has to go in time. It will take until National has probably got a credible replacement and someone who's willing to step up, which probably means, it may well mean that in the coming weeks and months there's a bit of time for Collins as they reflect on what went wrong. But I suspect it's going to be hard to keep a lid on disunity, and I suspect we will start to see a challenge in the coming weeks and months.
What do you think, Trish?
Yeah, I mean, you only need to look at the fact that I think there was actually just a total of 4 National MPs who turned up when Judith Collins had to face the National Party supporters on Saturday night. Not only is that incredibly bad, sort of teamsmanship, but I think it goes to the heart of how riven the caucus is. I mean, I think if I were them, I would be focusing on the fact that at the moment, there is still no one, I don't think, in that caucus who can go toe-to-toe with the Prime Minister in the way that Collins can. So, it would be wise to just get this review done and then see where they land.
Thanks very much, Trish. And just back to you on this one, Neil. Where do you even look for the leader to come through then by 2023? The funny thing is, by the end of last week, I started to see a rounded leader in Judith Collins by that second TVNZ debate, where there was humour, there was actually spending a bit of time talking in detail about some solid issues on which she's had vast experience as a previous cabinet minister. There was a bit of sharpness every now and then, but not too much. And you started to see her shaping a rounded persona. She could try to dig in and actually use that experience to be the person to rebuild this thing. But if not, where do you even begin to look? Do you bring Bridges back?
I mean, Bridges, he's been feeding the yaks and doing good social media and having a bit of a renaissance, but people forget that he was the most unpopular leader in modern New Zealand political history. I think it would take a very different Simon Bridges coming back to have a go. Mark Mitchell seems keen. He was very pointed in on election night about noting he had not supported Judith Collins' obesity comments. So I think with Mitchell, he's possibly going to have a run. After that, it gets a bit dire. I mean, one of the problems is they've been through so many leaders, and other potential leaders such as Amy Adams and Nikki Kaye have had to leave due to their role in coups. So the worry for National is that the next leader is not yet in their caucus. Luxon, again, someone who you would have thought maybe if Collins hangs on for a year might have a go. But after, I mean, his forays into the media have shown a bit of an experience so far. And after Todd Muller, I'm not sure they'll want to go with someone who's that inexperienced.
The other matter we must discuss, of course, is the departure of New Zealand First. It had a sense of inevitability about it. Do you see a future for that party? Is there anyone who's going to have the desire to stay and try and rebuild it?
No, they're finished. I think Winston Peters at 75, and I should say respect to him. We should recognise a 40-year political career, but at 75, he's not going to be coming back nearing 80 for a tilt to come back.
But that doesn't mean, look, it's a 21-year-old party now. It's at least that. It's more than that. So it's about coming up to 30, 27-year-old party. It could. It has an infrastructure. It has a caucus. The question is how many of that caucus is likely to stay around and want to rebuild.
And I think you need someone with real charisma to carry that sort of party. Shane Jones may have had it, but I can't see him waiting around for 3 years doing the hard yards in opposition. Other MPs like Tracy Martin or Ron Mark, who are very capable ministers, very capable MPs, I don't think they have that kind of X factor that would bring it back. And they're being eaten by New Conservatives, Advance NZ, the ACT Party. I think their moment has passed, and the remnants of New Zealand First, we may well see join up with other sort of fringe parties and form some other new force. Maybe Alfred Naro could set up his Christian party or something.
All right, we'll see how that all unfolds. Thanks both of you very, very much, Neil Jones and Trish Sherson.